Welcome to our Sunday service for January 14th, 2018. In a spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather. Good morning. We are happy that you have joined us on this beautiful day. My name is Dan Klimke, and I am pleased to serve as your worship associate this morning. We welcome all of you to our service, especially those of you who are searching for a spiritual home. As Unitarian Universalists, we envision a world in which our interdependence calls us to love and justice, and we welcome all who desire to transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action.
Our opening words are from an excerpt from Marge Piercy's famous poem, The Low Road. Two people can keep each other sane, can give support, conviction, love, massage, hope. Three people can join to form a committee, a wedge. A dozen make a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity and your own newsletter. 10,000 power and your own paper. 100,000 your own media. 10 million your own country. It goes on one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they say no. It starts when you say we and know who you mean. And each day you mean one more. If there are any other kids out there in the chairs, you can come on forward now to the quilt, join the others. I am going to make it rain. Here we go. You ready? I'm going to make it rain. Rain! Is it working? No. Okay. Well, maybe you can help me make it rain. Here's the plan. I've got two grown-up leaders who are going to help, Lindsay and Samantha. And Samantha's got Luke, who's also going to help. And any of you can choose one to follow. But first, let me tell you how it's going to go. These are our rain messengers. The kids are our rain messengers. I'm going to give each of our rain messengers a hand motion, and they will copy that hand motion and walk all the way to the back of the aisle and then come back up here. As they pass your row, whatever row you're in, and you guys can start when they start up here, copy their motion, but not before they get to your row. And the motions are going to change as we go along. Okay, so now, if you guys want to be rain messengers, any of you who want to, can follow Luke or Zoe. You can join, or you can stay up here too and just do what I do. That works too. Okay, here we go. Here's the message, the first message to take down. So walk down the aisle. When they pass you, join in. Feel free to go a little faster if you wish. Rain messengers. And rain messengers, come back up here to get the next direction. Good supplement. I'm going to do some more. Good. Luke. Thank you.
Yeah, we're going back.
We made it rain. I can't do that alone. I can't do that over text or Twitter. But we can do that together. When we come together as real people in real life, when we work together, we can create, we can heal, we can make the world a better place. Thank you for listening and helping me to make it rain. You can go to your programs now as the grown-ups stand and form the arches, and we all sing you on your way.
As we consider the power of coalition today, we are sharing the plate with this month with GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together, working together to listen, learn, articulate, dialogue, organize, and act to achieve social, environmental, and economic justice.
We'll begin our meditation today with a hymn. Then we'll join together in a minute of shared silence in which you are invited to reflect or pray or meditate or just simply rest. Let's remain seated and join in singing hymn number 86. Breathe in, breathe out. Blessed be.
Back in late September, I had the unique opportunity to attend a day and an evening workshop sponsored by GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together. an extraordinary assembly of 20 different organizations from labor, community, faith, education, and environmental groups gathered together for this intensive 10-hour training. This enthusiastic group represented a diverse segment of dedicated people coming together with one purpose, advancing the common good of Victoria and beyond. As Dan mentioned in the offertory, we were there to listen, learn, articulate, organize, and act to further social, environmental, and economic justice by recognizing the basic needs of those living in our communities. Together, we explored the values and traditions of our organizations, built cross-sector relationships, and practiced some of the fundamental skills for relational organizing. Early in the first evening, I spoke of the Unitarian first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Without exception, this principle was adapted as a worthy aspiration for this eclectic group, and our trainer, Joe, repeatedly referred to it. As a matter of fact, he told me privately that Unitarians throughout North America enthusiastically were on board with this concept and that we were a remarkable fit. We looked at issues within our community as to how they are and how they could be. We asked ourselves what we stood for. One of the major focuses of the weekend was to explore building trust, to develop understanding and identifying mutual interests and passions. In a brainstorming session, we came up with several community issues that could be addressed, including sustainable energy, affordable housing, elder care, mental health, transportation, and the list went on and on. We considered how an issue could be perceived as problematic if it was viewed as vague or overwhelming. We learned that it was more effective to identify issues in a concrete and specific way, especially when offering possible winnable solutions. These were the challenges we would face carrying these issues forward. We began to see that respect, dignity, honesty, kindness, and generosity were not empty catchphrases, but real ideals to aspire to when dealing with others. We studied the importance of initiating a listening campaign within our own individual groups, thereby creating a process of building relationships. It is hoped that many of you will become involved in these listening circles. I trust that through this process, we as Unitarians will discover the same shared values and concerns that we have in common with our community neighbors, issues that matter to all of us. And I believe that this is at the core of the whole intention of GVAT. So what are your priorities? What struggles are you facing? Would you like to see anything changed? What are you willing to talk about? Are we willing to listen effectively to the other with deep compassion and consideration? I'm very excited to be a part of this energetic and committed partnership. I believe we can achieve more as an alliance than individually. This is our opportunity to put our faith into collective action. Will you join me? And you will have a chance to exercise your vote at the congressional meeting next Sunday to decide whether our congregation will become a member of GVAT. As well, we are seeking people to attend the next training session to be held on Saturday, February the 24th. A very worthwhile endeavor indeed. By intentionally fostering relationships among different organizations, we will be able to build a strong power base. And acting together, we can create great change. Let's do this.
In preparation for next week's vote on whether our congregation wants to join GVAF, I've been meeting with a small team of congregants chaired by Marion Pape. Recently, Marion started one of our meetings by asking this question. When was the last time you had a really good conversation? Think about that for a moment. When was the last time you had a really good conversation? See if you can come up with one that happened in this congregational community. After some thinking, I eventually came up with a conversation I had, not at church, but sparked by a discussion in the broader Unitarian Universalist community, a conversation about white supremacy culture. Not white supremacists, those are the people who think that white people are superior to people of color. This is more nuanced, white supremacy culture, which is about how many of us have learned almost subliminally, often without conscious consent, that white ways of being are superior to non-white ways of being. For example, white supremacist culture would have us believe that a sense of urgency and getting things done quickly and right away is superior to an indigenous way of investing time in things, in telling a story or creating art or building relationships. The conversation was a good conversation because it was about something that matters to me on a personal level, with someone who also cares about the same issue on a personal level, and because the conversation helped me to question and learn and understand things that I hadn't before. When was the last time you had a really good conversation? I eventually came up with an answer, but the thing that struck me most was how hard it was for me to locate an example. So many of my conversations are logistical. Okay, so I'll pick up Demetrius from daycare, drop off Athena at her music theory class, and then go to the drugstore. Then after her class, we'll go pick up the glasses from the optometrist. Will you have time to go to the bank and the post office after work? Even at church, a lot of our conversations are logistical about meetings and projects. Church is supposed to be the place where we have good conversations and build relationships. Some of you do. Some of you even have good friends here. But it's also common for people to come to church, enjoy the music, the time for quiet meditation, and so on, but still feel kind of disconnected from the other people. It helps to get involved in a small group, the spirituality group, or AHA, the group of atheists, humanists, and agnostics, or our Soul Matters theme exploration conversations. These are settings in which you can have conversations with others about things that matter. In fact, I should note, Reverend Shauna is convening an event on February 25th that is specifically aimed at deepening connections in the congregation, to which you are all invited. You'll have the chance to experience the very cool Quaker-style Circle of Trust. It will be on Sunday, February 25th, after the service, and it's called Enriching Our Ties. Details will be in the February newsletter. The experience of feeling disconnected happens at church and is common in our society in general. People who study such things say it's gotten worse over the past century. It's no longer the norm for generations of families to all live, play, and work in the same neighborhoods, supporting one another through the institutions of civil society, schools, faith groups, community centers. Many of us are transient folks, moving over our lifetime from place to place, commuting to work in cars, less connected with our neighbors than ever before. We may choose to stay in touch with a few select friends or relatives, but there isn't that sense of connection with others with whom we share our neighborhoods, our cities, our world. And so when things go wrong in our neighborhoods, our cities, our world, some of us can feel a bit helpless and disempowered. What's it like for you? When you think of what's happening to our planet, when you think of what people are doing to each other through war, racism, xenophobia, harassment and abuse of all kinds, systems that keep people trapped in poverty and addiction, how do you feel? When you think of the next generation, those delightful little complex little people that we just sent through our arches with love, when you think of the world they will have to navigate, what do you feel? I feel fear and sadness. These feelings often commingle with overwhelm and helplessness. I don't think I'm alone. I know others feel overwhelm, despair, hopelessness. Some get numb and react by just focusing on their own little world, their own family, put the blinders on and get through whatever comes next. Because what else can you do? Even really involved activists who have been at it for years, they get frustrated too. Church member Philip Simons, for example, has spoken with us about his work with Victoria's Faith in Action group, how the small interfaith group held rallies and signed petitions and tried to pressure politicians, and how, in his words, it wasn't working. It was this frustration that led Faith in Action to look for other models, hence the birth of GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together. GVAT is based on a specific type of community organizing for change, a model that has been used in hundreds of cities, from Calgary to Portland to Washington, D.C., from Sydney, Australia to London, England. It's a model of community organizing which many of our Unitarian Universalist congregations are involved. This model is more effective than others for two reasons. First of all, it pulls together a coalition of lots of different types of organizations all working together. Interfaith, but also labor and other civic organizations like teachers and students, community service providers, and environmental groups. It rebuilds the power of that civic sector that used to be so strong, so that when these coalitions go to corporate leaders or politicians about a particular issue, they can say that they have thousands of people from a diverse range of society backing them up. I've heard that some politicians actually appreciate the clarity that this brings to their work. It helps them align their decisions with what the voters actually want. It's an effective way to amass the power of the people to effect change for the greater good. The second key to the effectiveness of this model is that it's relational. It takes the time to intentionally build relationships at every level, within each member organization, between the different organizations, and between the coalition and the people in power. On each level, this model invests in people meeting person to person and sharing a bit of their stories, who they are, why they do what they do, their concerns, their struggles, and where common ground might be found. It rebuilds those relationships that used to grow up naturally when people all lived, worked, and played in the same places. As Susan attested, it's a personally enriching process. It has also proven to be an effective strategy for change. Here's an outline of how this model generally works. There are several different types. I will focus on IAF, the umbrella organization under which GVAT is being formed. IAF stands for Industrial Areas Foundation. It's been leading this kind of work for 7 decades. Step one, relationship building. Each member organization, be it a congregation or a union, has its own listening campaign in which people talk about what issues are impacting their daily living, what issues make them sad or afraid or angry, what they would like to see change in their local community. Each organization comes up with a list of issues that matter to them. Step two, identify issues to address as a coalition. Representatives from each of the different member organizations, there's one or two per organization, come together to find common ground and select the top three or so issues with which to begin. Each organization gets one vote, regardless of size. Issues selected are issues that all of the organizations support. They never select an issue that would cause a division. The point is to find concerns that we share in common. Step three. Volunteers from member organizations work in teams to research issues and develop possible solutions and action plans. Anyone can do this. You don't have to be one of those official one or two representatives of your organization. I've heard that this has been one of the most powerful parts of this work for Unitarian Universalists, the opportunity to work with and build relationship with people of other faiths, and people who may be different from you in race, class, or culture. I quote from a Unitarian Universalist manual on community organizing. Blacks, white, Latinos, and Asians are rolling up their sleeves together to secure living wages, affordable housing, safe neighborhoods, effective public education, a healthier environment, and other improvements for their families and communities. Unitarian Universalists are joined by Jews, Catholics, Protestants, Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists in planning their strategies together. And in the process, they're listening to one another's life stories and building strong new relationships across barriers that normally keep people apart. End quote. The Calgary IAF group, which has selected as one of its issues reconciliation between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, notes on its website, quote, particularly in times of mistrust and stress, organizations that build bridges and trust and include diverse sectors within a single group are vital to counteracting racism, discrimination, and misunderstanding. So step three was research issues and develop solutions. For step four, I quote again from that same UU manual on community organizing. The next step is to present solutions to public officials, corporate officials, or both, and ask for their support and assistance. Typically, the leadership holds a series of smaller meetings with officials that culminates in a large public meeting, often involving thousands of people, where officials are asked to publicly announce support for the campaign. End quote. I saw a video of an event like this that was organized by the Vancouver version of GVAT. They're called the Vancouver Metro Alliance. It was last year, in advance of the provincial election, they had on stage Andrew Weaver, John Horgan, and an empty chair labeled Christy Clark, presumably to remind us that she declined the invitation. In attendance were over 800 delegates from 57 member organizations, as well as invited community leaders, politicians, guests, and observers. They asked the candidates, in front of all these people, if they were elected, whether they would support specific measures related to each of their four identified issues, which were affordable housing, access to transit, income inequality, and health care. In one of the presentations, a woman in a wheelchair signed through an interpreter, quote, I receive persons with disability benefits that are reduced by exactly the amount of CPP disability pension that I receive. So I am asking you today to pledge, if you are elected, to treat the CPP disability pension as earned income and give us our money back. Each politician had to respond directly to a request like that on each issue. It strikes me as incredibly powerful to be able to put the politicians on the line like that before elections and then hold them accountable afterward. They use this strategy with municipal politicians as well, talking about issues across party lines. Here's an example of a smaller scale, more local action, also from the Vancouver Alliance, from the team that was working on the issue of social isolation. In their listening campaigns, they heard that, quote, sidewalk disrepair was causing social isolation among seniors and those with mobility challenges because they needed a flat surface to use their walkers and wheelchairs. The team planned an intergenerational walk to map out where the sidewalks needed repair. They paired people with mobility issues with youth, also members of their organizations, who documented the areas of disrepair with iPads and whatnot. One of the youth said, quote, after walking with the seniors, I realized how hard it was to move a walker over a little crack that I didn't think was a big deal. I see now that unsafe sidewalks can affect everyone, even me. If I were to break my leg, I would be in the same situation, end quote. The team took their report to city officials, who received them warmly and were happy to work with them toward better conditions. The report concludes, quote, we are proud of our work, happy to get our sidewalks in better repair, and glad to have formed new working relationships between the member organizations in our neighborhood and with the city of Vancouver, end quote. There are other success stories in other cities. Little issues and big issues. I posted a link on our congregation's Facebook group to stories from other IAF groups. The fifth step is, when one action is done or an issue is won, move on to the next action or issue. These coalitions stay relevant, constantly responding to the concerns of their constituents. So that's the overview. Two cautions for Unitarian Universalists. One, building an organization like GVAT takes time. It's born, but it's not ready for action yet. It's still gathering member organizations. We need to be patient. Two, because this particular chapter is new, it doesn't yet have a track record. It's not like we're buying something ready-made that comes with a guarantee. If we join, we'll be building this thing together. We need to increase our tolerance for uncertainty and let go of the need to have all the answers in advance. Patience and becoming comfortable with uncertainty, both good spiritual practices, right? There's no guarantee, but we do have a really good blueprint to guide our building. And building it together in relationship is very rich work. Last month, in preparation for next week's vote, we collected questions from you about GVAT. Dan will ask some of them now.
What organizations have already joined GVAT?
Here we go. Our Place Society, St. Vincent de Paul Society, Congregation Emmanuel, Shambhala Buddhist Meditation Center, Sierra Club BC, BC Sustainable Energy Association, Indigenous Perspective Society, Camosun College Student Society, BC Government Employees Union, Greater Victoria Teachers Association, St. Patrick's Parish Church, St. John's Anglican Church, and the Sisters of St. Anne.
How much will it cost our congregation to become a member of GVAT?
There is a dues structure that covers all the different kinds of member organizations. So you have a choice. 1% of operating budget, or $2 per member, with a minimum of $700 per year. Our congregation would begin with $700 per year with a hope to increase that over time.
Where would we get that money?
Initially, through our Share the Plate collection, supplemented if need be with SRC funds. We may wish to eventually build it into our budget as a line item.
What do GVAT dues make possible?
a paid full-time organizer with all the resources of the IAF to assist and guide us. That's that awesome blueprint that we get to work with. Dues also go toward the cost of trainings and events hosted by GVAT.
Is GVAT political? Is it partisan?
GVAT is political in that actions often take the form of urging politicians to act on certain issues. But GVAT is non-partisan. They focus on issues, not parties. They work with whoever is in power.
Is GVAT a registered charity?
Yes.
How many member organizations does GVAT need before it can start selecting issues to work on?
They need at least 20 to be sustainable. In addition to the 13 that they have already, there are currently about 5 that are seriously considering membership right now. Readiness will also hinge on whether there's enough diversity in the coalition.
About how long are they thinking it will take to get to the launch point?
Perhaps a year, maybe less. If they get enough diversity in the coalition by June, the listening campaigns could run as early as the fall.
What would we do in the meantime?
Anyone in our congregation could attend the next training that Susan mentioned on Saturday, February 24th. It's called How to Build Power for the Common Good. You'd learn more about how to use the tools of this method, and you would get to start connecting with others in potential member organizations. If we vote to be a member organization, this training would be free to our congregants. The more of us get involved, the more effective the whole thing becomes. Check your eWeekly and Facebook for details. Oh, there's more. But wait, there's more. And then, on Monday, March 12th, GVAT will be hosting an educational forum on the fentanyl crisis. The aim is to bring GVAT member organizations together to continue to build cross-sector relationships and hear testimonials about the different ways that fentanyl is affecting people in the community. Key community and political leaders will be invited so that groundwork can be laid for relationships with GVAT that we may later need to address issues, this issue and other issues as well. And in June, GVAT is planning a celebration of our power event at which all the member organizations get together with one another, and also, again, we start to build relationships with key political and community leaders.
I have more questions, but I know you don't have time to answer them right now. What should I do?
Come to the GVAT forum after the service. Get some soup at the super, and then come to the Farmhouse Common Room at 12:15. You will get to meet the organizer for GVAT. That's Flossie, who I made introduce herself. Sorry, Flossie. She's the organizer, as well as some other GVAT representatives. You can ask your questions, and you will get to experience a sample, just a little tiny sample, of the kind of one-on-one conversations that GVAT uses, a chance to connect with a fellow congregant about something that matters to you. Regardless of how the vote turns out, I wish for all of you more good conversations, a greater sense of connection, and a sense that you have the power to work with others toward our common good. So may it be. From the stories of our living. Did you hear that lyric? From the stories of our living. That's where it starts. Share your stories with one another. What do you care about and why? In our communion, may we find the strength, the commitment to work toward a more just society together. So may it be.